So my talk today is going to have a little bit different feel than what we've heard so far today. And then I'm going to be talking about fluidized systems. So we're still looking at particles which are fairly massive and dominated by inertial effects, but they will get energy from the fluid in the context of fluidized beds. We want to look at the impact of cohesion on these systems. And I'm going to say mild cohesion in that it's not large enough to actually preclude fluidization, which could happen if you have very large cohesive effects. I'd like to recognize Michael Weber, who's the PhD student who primarily worked on this, National Science Foundation for funding, as well as some folks at DOE Metal and Professor Murthy from Purdue University, who were instrumental in getting us a code that we could build upon. They have an open source code available from DOE. And so again, the system we're interested in is a gas fluidized bed, not a liquid fluidized bed, with mild cohesion effects. When we started this work, our long-term goal was really to try to think ahead towards a continuum theory which would incorporate the effects of cohesion. And if we think about that, Talbis is typically done for fluidized beds, not with cohesion, but just describing fluidized beds in general in the high velocity regime, is to build upon kinetic theory. So kinetic theory, we use the same equations that we've seen a lot during this workshop. We'll add a drag force to them. That drag force will be equal and opposite, and it will also be included in the gas phase equations. I'm just going to wait till the plane passes. Okay, and so when we think about incorporating cohesion into these types of models, we have to be consistent with their assumptions. And their assumptions being that they have binary and instantaneous interactions, which we know cohesive interactions are not. If we form an agglomerate, those agglomerates may stay in contact until they're hit by another particle, et cetera. So we're looking at a simplified type of model that we might incorporate into this continuum framework long term. And so this work is not focused on the continuum framework, but is actually focused on a simplified form of the cohesion model, which is consistent with those kinetic theory assumptions, namely a square well model, and comparing that directly to a more complicated, and what we think is a more complete cohesive theory, and that is, particle-particle cohesion model, and that is one based on the Hamaker theory for van der Waals forces. So that's the idea here. And so what are we doing? Well, we're basically looking at many particle systems via MD simulations of the particles. The fluid phase is treated as a continuum in this, I have here, Eulerian-Lagrangian model. And we're basically comparing back-to-back the simplified model for cohesion, the square well model, to this more complex Hamaker model. Yes. What type of model? I will, in just a couple slides. So for those of you who may not be familiar with the effects of cohesion in fluidized beds, I have just one introductory slide here. Cohesion can obviously affect the fluidization behavior of systems. And this is illustrated via Gellhardt's classification, which is basically an empirical classification that has been compiled. And on the y-axis here, we have the density difference, although it's not easy to tell from how it's labeled, between the solid phase and the gas phase. So if we talk about a typical solid, which its density is the order of 1,000 versus air, which density is the order of 1, we're somewhere right on this line here. And as we go to the right, we're increasing the particle size. So for very small particles, we have a cohesive system. And those are called group C particles, and they just don't fluidize well. And an example of that is shown here in a video I've taken from Professor Rhodes' website out of Monash University. Right now, we have gas going through the bottom here. If it's playing, it's starting to play. And then we'll see this whole layer just comes up, and it's going to continue to come up, and then it's just going to kind of bust apart. And then after it busts apart, you see we have these channels here. And this is something really tiny, like flour or talc. So we don't get good fluidization. These particles are just too small to fluidize in a good manner. As we move to the right, though, on this graph, we go to A, which is aerodible particles. And they can fluidize, although we think cohesion effects are still important here. We think because there is some level of cohesion, obviously, as we go to the from left to right here, which slowly attenuates as we go to the right. We can go to larger and larger particles, group B, group D. They display slightly different fluidization behaviors, but that's the general gist of what we're trying to get across. Clearly, this cohesion is going to have an impact on the mixing level, which is a very important property associated with fluidized beds. So we want to get some sort of handle on how cohesion is going to impact that level of mixing. Another thing we'd like to look at is pressure overshoot. And this is something that's still not well understood, at least in my opinion, in the literature. And what I mean by pressure overshoot is that if we look at the pressure drop of a gas solid fluidized bed versus the gas velocity we're feeding into it. Obviously here, we start at the origin. As we begin to fluidize it, this is the packed bed state. Our pressure drop is going to increase as we increase the gas velocity. It's actually going to increase beyond the point in some systems, I should say this doesn't happen all the time, in some systems beyond the weight over the area of the bed. So this is what I'm referring to as the pressure overshoot. We're still not fluidized here, it's at the packed bed state until we reach this pressure drop. Then it fluidizes, the pressure drops dramatically back to that weight and stays at that as we increase the velocity. There's a hysteresis in this, though, that as we decrease the velocity, we see that we no longer go through that pressure drop overshoot. So understanding this pressure drop overshoot has been, I should say, it's been attributed to cohesion, it's been contributed to friction at the wall and a few other mechanisms, and I'll go into those in more detail because this is one of the things we're really trying to explore with the model we've put together. So those are some of the things we're interested in. I don't want to spend a lot of time on the model. It's basically a molecular dynamics type model where you're using soft spheres for the particles. Again, this is an extension of the MFIX code, which is an open source free code available from DOE Metal. It was originally made for Eulerian-Eulerian models, so you'd treat both the gas phase and the solid phase as a continuum, and that's where all the kinetic theory type models came in. It's recently been extended by Professor Murphy at Purdue for this discrete particle, so you can now couple that to the fluid phase. And so this is what we were using. We were just building on that and adding the cohesion models. We're doing it very simplistically. It's through a drag force model that's based on empirical data. On the density of the solids? Yes, through the drag force. The drag force depends on the density of the solids. For this one, we're actually using one divide that was developed by Shamlal and O'Brien, but we've looked at Richardson Zakai, we've looked at Wen and Yu, we've looked at several different drag force models. So, but they all are empirical in nature, we just don't have anything better. Okay, so cohesion models. So following up, I talked about the simplified cohesion model in which we assume the cohesion is instantaneous and binary, it's a square wall model. We want to assess it against the more complete model based on Hamaker theory. So the square well model is basically characterized by two parameters, the well depth and the outer radius of the particle. Now the inner radius of the particle is its true physical radius. The square well radius is the one associated with that outer one. It's not a physical radius. All that's saying is when the particles are 2R outer apart, that's when they feel that cohesive interaction. And it's instantaneous. So they come across here, there's no, this is potential energy versus separation distance. They feel no cohesive force. They do when they're two R outer apart, that gives them a boost in potential energy equal to the well depth, which is that other parameter. They then don't feel any cohesion between here and the inelastic collision, which is again impulsive in nature. Then they can separate, they may or may not form an agglomerate, and I'll talk about that in the next slide. That's compared to the Hamaker theory, which assumes, as you're familiar with, that force varies continuously with separation distance, that is, as the particles get closer, this force gets larger and larger. It would go to infinity towards as the particles touch, we know that's not realistic. We used then a cutoff distance, which was equal to the interatomic distance for common solids. It's on the order of 10 to the minus 10 microns. That's what's recommended for this. This is also characterized by Hamaker constant, a material property that you can look up in a table. So these are two constants that we know. The question is for the square well model, what is D and R outer? They're not something we can physically look up. So I'll address that in two slides. What I'd first like to talk about is just a little bit about how the square well model behaves. The particles are far apart, they don't feel cohesion. They get to two outer well radii apart from one another. They feel this cohesion. It's instantaneous. So then as they go towards each other, that makes the collision more head-on. Then as they go towards each other, they don't feel any more cohesion. They engage in an inelastic collision, which is shown here. And then they go apart from one another. They're then at that point where their two are outer apart again. And they may or may not form an agglomerate, depending on what their initial relative velocity was, the normal component of the relative velocity. And we can do some real easy simulations here to show you that particles can escape from one another. This is just a two-particle simulation. The particle incoming velocities is large enough, they don't form an agglomerate. If it's a little bit smaller, they will form an agglomerate. And you see when this agglomerate forms, it's going to keep bouncing back and forth. We have continued inelastic collisions. It's just going between the hard radii and the outer well. So that essentially becomes more and more tangential because we're losing normal velocity, normal relative velocity of each inelastic collision. You can see they become more and more tangential. I'll let that go one more time so you can see that phenomenon I just talked about. First, they're bouncing. So the energy loss associated, there's one at the inelastic collision, And there's one that is associated with when the particles are coming in through the cohesive well, they have a different normal relative velocity than when they do leaving the well. And so that is also going to cause an energy difference in the system, and that's due to the inelastic collision when they're physically touched. So that's where it comes from. But we're assuming we have gas, and so we expect lubrication forces to be more important in a liquid system. But we're the stickiness from the cohesive force. We don't have anything like that in here, no. And actually, these that I'm showing you are just from granular systems. I'm going to add the fluid in later. This is where the equations and everything are. But you're right, we don't have that in the fluid system, and that's why we wouldn't want to compare it to liquid-solid system. It's restricting it just to gas-solid system. So we can also have the case where we have a doublet that's already formed. We can have a third particle come in. It can either form an agglomerate or it can break up that doublet. And if we look at this in a simple shear flow system, we see what we get is essentially many particle agglomerates, even though we have binary and instantaneous collision rules for both cohesion and inelasticity. We see that we have multi-particle agglomerates. These red particles mean that they're within each other's cohesive well. They continuously form, rearrange, and break apart. They start with two particles. We'll get larger particle agglomerates over here. So it takes the appearance of what we'd at least expect, just qualitatively. We're not going anything beyond that right now, but at least no gas here. I add it later on. Yeah. This is just to really show you the collision rules associated with the system. So moving on, the one thing I said is that for the Hamaker model, we can look up those constants. We have no idea what those constants are for our square well model. So what we want to do is create some sort of mapping between the two on a particle level. So we have a particle level benchmark. Then what we want to do is apply that mapping to many particle systems and see how they behave, things like minimum fluidization velocity, mixing, and that's how we're actually going to test how good that mapping is. And so we go ahead and do that. I'm not going to talk about, just for the sake of time, why these two didn't work out, but I'd be happy to talk to other people about them if they're interested in those details. What we went with is actually looking for these two, for these systems. We have two particles. We're going to put them in a normal head-on collision, okay? We start at a high velocity, and we know they're going to escape. We continue to decrease the velocity until they no longer escape. They form an agglomerate. At this point, we call this the escape velocity or some critical velocity. And then what we can do is we can match the square well model parameters such that they achieve the same escape velocity as the Hamaker theory. And so that is the mapping method that we're using. And again, I could go into more details later. Yeah, and that's a really good point. And that's a detail I'd be happy to answer in some of our questioning period. But what we found is that we have a physical length scale associated with the Hamaker theory. It turns out that our square well model isn't very sensitive to that length scale at all. So that's basically what it comes down to. So we did some mapping. I want to save some time. Let's just say the minimum fluidization compared fairly well when we mapped between the Hamaker theory model and the square well model in that regime. We can also look at the mixing to see how well it maps there. And to characterize mixing, what we're doing is we're just saying the top half of the particles in the bed initially, we're calling them particles one. All of these particles identical. The ones in the bottom half of the bed, we're calling particles two, and we're tracking their average height. So if the particles become well mixed, the average height should equal one another at long times. And then our mixing index, this I here, should equal one. And indeed, for the square well model and the Hamaker model for no cohesion, which are the same identical models, we see that the mixing index goes to one at long time periods. So we do get mixing. As we increase the level of cohesion, here you see we've matched the escape velocity for the Hamaker model with that of the square well model. And we get pretty similar tracking between the dynamics of mixing associated with these two systems. Similarly, when we increase it, the escape velocity even more, meaning we become more cohesive, we see we're getting barely any mixing in these, which we would expect at the limit. So again, this mapping seems to hold up both at the level of minimum fluidization velocity as well as at the level of mixing in fluidized beds. Well, in that last one I showed, we started with no cohesion, so there was absolutely no cohesion in the bed. Yeah, but then we just did add it in the packed state. But it was small enough such that as soon as we turned on the gas velocity for low levels of cohesion, we did see some mixing. But you're right, for that final one, Oops. If I go up here, this is a strong level of cohesion. It's one big agglomerate. They're not moving. The mixing index doesn't change. Okay. So the mapping between those two seemed fairly good. So we wanted to use these models and compare them to probe something which isn't very well understood in the literature, and that is the pressure overshoot. Experiments tell us that pressure overshoot increases as the bed width decreases over a certain parameter range, and that the pressure overshoot also increases as moisture increases. Okay? So two experimental observations we have. Now, what is the source of pressure overshoot? And if we think about this in the very simplest way, we just think of a macroscopic balance, which I actually haven't shown up here. If we think about a macroscopic balance around the bed of particles, we know that we're going to have pressure drop in the vertical direction. We'll have the weight of the bed in the vertical direction. We also have an interaction with the boundaries. That's going to be a frictional effect, which is going to oppose motion. And friction won't be important at the bottom boundary because it's perpendicular to the direction that we're interested in the vertical direction, but that's where cohesion would come in. We'd have cohesion throughout that particle mass interacting with the distributor plate, which would also resist motion of those particles. And so those are the four things just from a macroscopic balance we see. There have been several people who have looked at one-dimensional force balances. So this is the gas phase. We have pressure drop equals drag force. Beta is our drag force coefficient. This is the solid phase balance. So this term right here refers to the compressive stress and how it varies in the y direction and how that contributes to the force. We also have frictional effects. This mu is the friction factor between the particle and the wall. The J is the Janssen coefficient, which comes essentially from the silo analysis for those people who may be familiar with that, and it's a relationship between the compressive stress in the XX direction and the YY direction. It's just a constant of proportionality. On the right-hand side, we have weight and drag force again. Okay, so the people who have looked at these models have essentially said, well, for systems where we have particle wall friction, for experiments where we see an increase in bed width, as bed width decreases, that can be attributed to particle friction because that term is the only one that has the particle diameter in it. But we can forget about friction, and if we just make the compressive stress at fluidization a negative value, so that yield stress is a negative value, which means it's a tensile stress, which a cohesive pack of particles can support a tensile stress, then we can also get pressure overshoot. So both of those can lead to pressure overshoot. The pressure overshoot associated with cohesion would not vary with bed width, and that associated with friction would vary with bed width. So what people have done in the literature to date is looked at these sorts of systems, where pressure overshoot increases as bed width decreases. They say we know friction is important, so I'm just going to outright ignore cohesion through the boundary condition I apply here. That term is still there, it's just the boundary condition looks different. It doesn't take on a tensile value. And go ahead, apply these equations, and fit for a given size, so for a fixed D, they will fit the value of UJ, and they'll treat that as one constant, and then look at how the model predictions vary with bed width. And what they find is they get pretty good predictions. What we asked ourselves is, well, a priori, they made an assumption that cohesion was important, and then they use a fitted parameter. So can cohesion still be important in these systems, and can you get a model that would still match that? So in other words, what is the relative contribution of cohesion in these systems? And that's what we looked at with our simulations. And so for our base case simulation, we're starting out on the left here. This is our fluidization curve. Again, we have pressure drop versus superficial velocity. Packed bed, you see a little bit of overshoot here. We have wide error bars here because it's bubbling. The pressure fluctuations are going to go up and down a lot when you're in a bubbling state, so that's to be expected. So what we see is for the no cohesion case, where we have a normal friction coefficient of 0.3, we see just a little bit of overshoot. If we can maintain that same friction coefficient and add mapped, here we have the square well model, we have the Hamaker model. Again, these parameters are mapped. We'll see that the overshoot increases significantly from this case where we didn't have cohesion. If we instead look at the no cohesion case and increase friction, we don't get that much of the influence on our overshoot. So for this particular system, it looks like cohesion is important. And the models track one another well, which is a good thing, and we assume that this is attributed to cohesion with the distributor plate, okay, based on the macroscopic balance I described earlier. Yes?
Okay.
These two should look the same, but they should be higher than this. And I apologize here, we just don't have enough significant digits here. This is really 1.05, as is this. All of these scales are the same. Yeah, we just stopped it. We truncated it too soon. Yeah, no, that is confusing, admittedly. Okay, so I don't know why this is all black all of a sudden. Oh, there we go. That looks... Let me try again. Okay, so then what we did is we said, well, let's look into that a little bit deeper. We assume this is due to cohesion with the distributor plate, but the great thing about molecular dynamic simulations is you can just selectively turn on and off physical mechanisms that are not easy to do in the experiment. And so what we did here is we said that we're going to one at a time remove each of these. We're going to first remove sidewall friction, then particle-particle cohesion, and particle-distributor cohesion. We assumed these two would go hand in hand because of the mechanism I described earlier. And so what we found for the square wall models, that's exactly what happened, that if we moved either particle-particle cohesion or particle-distributor plate cohesion, that it affected the pressure overshoot. But if we did the particle sidewall friction, didn't change it very much. So again, it looks like cohesion with the distributor plate is important. We found something different for the Hamaker model, that we found if we remove particle-particle cohesion, our pressure drop overshoot decreased. Then if we remove particle sidewall friction, our pressure overshoot decreased. But particle distributor cohesion didn't seem to play a role. And so our understanding of this is just something similar to what we talked about earlier this morning, is that particle cohesion is actually increasing the normal force with the wall. We know that friction is proportional to that normal force. So it's, cohesion is actually serving to enhance friction as opposed to causing a greater force with the distributor plate. It still is causing a greater force with the distributor plate. It's just not very important in the system. That's further exemplified if we compare the two models, the square well and the Hamaker, their dependency on width. We see that the pressure overshoot for the Hamaker model is dependent on the width of the bed. These are two different widths, and we see the same is not true for the square well model. So it again says that it's friction that's important in the Hamaker model, which we believe to be the more reliable of the two models, but this is enhanced by cohesion. You just can't ignore that cohesion term. So with that, I'll wrap up and just say that the escape velocity mapping between those two models, the strength is it can predict minimum fluidization, it can predict mixing levels, but there's different physical mechanisms related to the pressure overshoot. However, in terms of incorporating that into kinetic theory type model, this isn't a region, this is a packed bed state. We wouldn't be applying a kinetic theory model there. So for systems where we do have rapid flows between particles, it would still be good. The mechanisms responsible for overshoot, we think previous efforts have been a bit oversimplified in neglecting cohesion because cohesion can influence friction even when friction is important. So, thank you.
A couple of quick questions.
Sorry.
Hi. What we saw in experiments was like in your cartoon, the pressure drop when it happens is very rapid.
Mm-hmm.
Right, just comes down very suddenly.
That's right.
Your simulations seem to come down more gradually.
Yeah. And part of the challenge associated with that, like we see, we also didn't see for the other systems, is that bubbling would go. Bubbling is almost immediate in our system. The reason for this is we don't have enough computational resources to do as many particles as are in experiments. So we have the choice either to do very small experiments, or very small simulations, pipes, or we can make the particles larger. We chose to make the particles artificially larger, and because of that, we artificially increased the cohesion to keep the balance between the weight and the cohesive forces the same. And we believe that's why you're not seeing that clear demarcation down, and as well as why you get the onset of bubbling almost immediately where you don't in experiments.
In your in the experiment, don't you think that the boundary condition can play an important role, and in particular due to during the overshoot, because
in the simulation or in the continuum theory? I'm sorry.
Because if you push like that toward the, you can have an increasing friction on an increasing friction effect on the wall, because the system is being compacted at the beginning.
And I'm not sure I follow. Are you asking about the initial condition associated with the simulation?
Yeah, and with the experiment. What I mean is, if you are blowing up...
And they're identical, and if I could just say it really quickly what we're doing, and it might answer your question. We're actually doing defluidization before we do fluidization. So we're starting at a well-mixed state, slowly decreasing the gas velocity. So we always have a good starting state, then turning on that gas velocity very slowly and ramping up.
Okay.
What is the influence of the restitution coefficient in this case? Does that have any particular role to play? Because I would expect that it would be very low in these systems, irrespective of what would be assumed.
The sensitivity to the restitution coefficient, we didn't find much undue sensitivity. Yeah. I don't know if that answered your question directly, but sure, it wasn't very sensitive, but we looked at that.
I guess the one place where I see your two models being very different from one another is in the Hemmerker model. When your particles become make a cluster, they actually remain touching with
exactly.
each other versus jiggling around. I was wondering, that's why when these guys are hitting the side wall, one is actually sticking, the other one is actually, as soon as it gets away, the gas is blowing it again.
That's exactly what happens.
So you kind of kill the friction effect from the sticking
right.
particles.
That's exactly right. And that's why the Hemmerker model, which is truer to that frictional behavior and the enduring nature okay. of the contact, is giving rise to a greater contribution to the pressure
but
overshoot
if you, you
than
know.
The square well model. That's exactly
And if you had a square well model where you actually stick at the end instead of bounce off.
But then we'd be violating what we were trying to do in the beginning, which was instantaneous and binary type collision rules.
Vaguely remember that you also have pressure overshoot for type B particles. You might have also pressure overshoot for Geldar particles
type B. Particles?
Yes. So you increase polarization, then when bubbling happens, there is abrupt drop of the pressure, and you have practically the same kind of phenomena as you mentioned for cohesive particle. But the reason is totally different: is dynamic instability of homogeneously fluidized state. And you probably should have the same effect in this system.
And I would say I feel like our simulations are more representative of the A range than the B range, because basically we chose the parameters, we chose the particle size to be a little bit larger. Then we did see, like I showed in the beginning, that type C fluidization behavior, we were able to get that. And so we just pumped up the particle size enough so that we were on the other side of that boundary. So I believe these results and these conclusions are more representative of type A particles.
So in the same experiments that was referring to, there too, bubbling starts immediately after the pressure overshoot. There's no place where this thing is uniformly fluidized without bubbles, and which is actually the question I wanted to ask. If you sit just below the pressure overshoot at some fixed values of gas velocity,
mm-hmm.
none of the experiments actually show any motions. Is that the state of motion in this
so
system?
So any motion?
Yeah, everything is just locked in place. If you sit below the sudden drop, NMR, X-ray, light scattering show nothing moves.
And I'm sorry, I'm not sure exactly where we are here. Are we still
so
in the past state?
Just below where it started dropping?
Sure, yep. That's true, it's a packed bed, absolutely.
So it is, actually, yes. There's actually no dynamics
yes.
there. Okay.
Yes.
So then I think the experiments show exactly what your stuff shows. There's bubbling immediately at the pressure overshoot.
And again, I think we could talk about it more later, but I think it has to do with the difference between type A and type B, and I feel like ours are more representative of type A, but they are bubbling right away because we had to artificially make the particle size larger. We can talk about it later, though. I'd be happy to. I don't want to delay Michelle too much more. For the instability. Right.